Welcome to our podcast. Jim Labenthal and myself, I'm Steve Weiss. We finally succumbed to what everybody was begging us to do. Change the name to The Odd Couple of Investing. And it's more descriptive of what we do, although we may find ourselves agreeing on the show today. We definitely didn't agree when the day started out, but times change. It's a fast-moving market. And I'm going to turn the floor over to you right away because, man, you called the bottom, at least for today. So tell us what you're thinking, Jim.
Sure. Of course, first I've got to think about who's Felix Unger and who's Oscar Madison, but we'll develop that over time. We came in today. It was a heavy market last week. We know that. I mean, a heavy market. The S&P, I think, was down 9% peak to trough when we went into today. And I've been calling for some time for a correction, but the way a correction bottoms is usually, not always, but most of the time, with a capitulation, a washout. And boy, did we get it today. At one point, the S&P 500 was off 4% intraday. The VIX shot up to 38, which that's a number for those of you who aren't really well-versed in it. That's a number of people running around with their hair on fire. That's not like a normal, hey, we're having a bad day. That is a really, really scary number. People are scared. And when I look at the economic fundamentals and the profit picture, I'm just not seeing that. I'm not seeing that level of risk and danger out there. Certainly, I'm aware of Russia versus Ukraine and the Fed and interest rates. And those are real risks, but not risks commensurate with a 38 vol. So I came in today wanting to find that capitulation. It presented me. It smacked me right in the face. You were on the show today, CNBC, Steve. I kind of felt like I had to chime in when I was listening to the early discussion. So I tweeted, I thought Scott and you and the producers would catch it. And they did. Gave me a chance to come on and say, listen, this is what capitulation looks like. I'll summarize by saying, you know this, Steve, better than anyone. There is smart money out there. Hedge fund guys who are looking at this and saying, just give me the opportunity. Just give me the opportunity to put that money to work. And boy, did they come in today. This turnaround intraday is one of the strongest I've ever seen. We ended up green on the day after being down 4%. Tomorrow is vitally important. If we get follow through, that's big. And by the way, and I'll turn back to you on this, the two things facing the market right now are the Fed and Russia. If either Putin or Powell throws the slightest olive branch to the world, the slightest olive branch, this stock market's going to rip. Now, I can't tell you that that's going to happen. I'm just going to tell you if it does, this stock market's going to rip. Back to you, Felix or Oscar, whichever you are today.
Well, here's what I'd say. I've been pretty good in the market. It doesn't mean I haven't lost money. Of course, I lost money because I'm still net long and got down to 30% net long. And the toughest thing for me is making the turn when I have a real firm sense of opinion, more so when I'm negative on the market. So, for example, in 08, I actually made money because I was net short, but I didn't get back in the long side till after most of the bounce was done. Definitely nowhere near March 2009 when the market bottomed. Similarly, this time, I was a little, having learned that lesson, I'd say a little more open this time. And it was a major flush. And when you spoke on the show and I saw it, and this is giving you big credit, which pains me, and
it's hard for you to do.
I'll vomit later, but so I'm going to hold it in. If you hear me gagging a little bit, that's because I'm proud of you, Steve.
Yeah. I'm proud of you.
And that 08 lesson taught me, and I got in, I think, more appropriately in 2020 from COVID. This time, I expect to go on a little longer. I didn't expect it to be as violent as it was earlier today. And I was looking for the bounce, but I did nothing until I was convinced the bounce was there. So it wasn't until, I guess, like right after the show when we started to make a meaningful move and where I took off some of the hedges, and then when you and I spoke and I said, yeah, I'm trying to figure out the SMH. And you said, cover it. You made a lot of money in it. Cover it. And I did.
Good. Good.
So right now I'm actually back long. I actually went well over 100% long today at one point during the day. Now I'm down back to about 20% or 80% net long, 20% of powder. So the way I see it is you point out two things. You point out Powell, that's appropriate. And my question is, which we can't answer, has the market now over-discounted the fact that what he was going to say, being hawkish is the assumption, was fully in the market. Now we retreated from that somewhat. Don't know the answer. I noticed that the 10-year yield started to move higher after being down. It's a puzzle to me towards the end of the day. So I don't know. So I think it's dangerous to do that. And I don't think a lot of stocks, frankly, have gotten cheap enough. I'm still not touching Cathie Wood stock.
No.
Even though I traded the RKK today. But there are other values. I mean, you've got some semis trading here, less than 10 times earnings that are going to grow over 20%.
Hey, let me first off corroborate what you're saying, that it would be unusual for today's bounce to mark the bottom. That's a little too sharp. You know it. You said it. I agree. I'd like that to be the case, and that's why tomorrow really matters, because if we go up, I mean, certainly investors with cash on the sidelines, and there's a lot of cash on the sidelines. We know that. We see where M2 is. They're paying attention to what happened today, and if they see the follow-through, it's going to come in and make it go higher. But I corroborate with you that this would be a sharp increase. Now, I do want to talk about some stocks with you and where I'm buying. The compliance guys, they'll kill me if I don't say that. Look, if I talk about a specific stock, assume I own it unless I tell you otherwise. Here's where I was buying today. I was buying the cyclicals, okay? And that's my tried and true favorite small cap cyclical, Greenbrier. They make rail cars, okay? You can't get more cyclical than bending metal into freight cars. What else did I buy? I bought a little small cap aerospace, Ducommun. I bought some Viacom along the way. I did, as the day went on, nibbled a little more at Apple and Qualcomm. I'd sold some Apple earlier this year, and Qualcomm I've got big plans for this year. So what you're hearing from me, Steve, is I'm buying value and I'm buying growth at a reasonable price tech. But like you, I'm not buying Cathie Wood stocks. I'm not buying Shopify and Fastly and Okta and these things that are measured on a price to sales ratio that I can't get my arms around.
So I got into the market today by taking off my hedges. Now, I had reduced a number of positions. In fact, I had sold AMAT at some point last week. I forget when it was. And that stock has massively corrected. And it was okay when you had this valuation umbrella of these ridiculously high-priced stocks. So when you have Snowflake, and that's the one I typically beat on because it's so egregious and their governance is so poor given what they give their CEO, which is about $100 million a month, I got to believe the guy would have left retirement for $50 million a month. So I got in the way I got out, which is buying the Qs, going long the SMH. I sold most of them. I'm still long them. So as I mentioned, my positioning is much different than when I came in today. I even bought the ARK, the RKK, and sold most of that. I bought a ton of it. But I added some to XPO Logistics. So I had lunch last week with the chairman and founder, United Rental, who is now the chairman and founder of GXO and XPO, and with a couple of his management team. And Brad Jacobs doesn't get near what he deserves in terms of being just a visionary CEO who's built these businesses. Now, I always start every meeting, don't tell me anything that's not public, because I look better in pinstripes, not jail stripes. And he didn't. But just reading the expression that in terms of how bullish they are in their business, doesn't mean they won't miss this quarter, doesn't mean they won't make the quarter, no idea. But the long-term vision is there, and this stock has corrected massively. And GXO has been doing a roadshow. They put themselves out there. They've had like four fireside chats in the last 2 weeks. I'll just do a couple of them. It's a fantastic business. So I add to those, and I'd sold down Corvo and Skyworks. I added a little to Corvo, but otherwise it's really taking off the hedges and making those longs instead of shorts.
Steve, just extending what you're saying, by the way, I don't own GXO, but I've been listening to you talk about it. I've been hearing a lot about it and a lot of positive about it. So I need to focus on that. But I hear you saying the same thing. You're buying some cyclicals. You're buying some tech at the same time.
Oh, Jim, let me interrupt 1 second. This can make you very happy. I did buy some more. I had sold half my Cliff position. I bought some today when it was actually in the red. I said, this is ludicrous.
Well, Steve, I'd like to say that all is forgiven, but that's a tough row to hoe. No, I'm just kidding. All is forgiven. I'm glad to hear you say that. I mean, that's one that's the baby gets thrown out with the bathwater. I spend so much time talking about that that I actually want to focus a little bit on tech right now, because this is going to be a very interesting week in terms of earnings, which, let's face it, the market is not paying attention to. At least I don't think the market's paying attention to. The market, as we've already talked about, is paying attention to the Fed and Putin. But We've got Microsoft coming out. I think that's tomorrow. We got Apple coming out. We got Intel coming out. Now, you mentioned just a second ago about semiconductor stocks trading at 10 times. I'm not ready to take the plunge at Intel because they've had these operational issues for 2 years. But I am watching. I am definitely watching because that is a company that's ripe for a turnaround in an industry that is capital intensive. So it requires scale. And this is the second largest in the world semiconductor company after Samsung. So you get the slightest whiff of a turnaround there. Might be a little early, but still, I think I might have to take the plunge if you get that sign that operational issues are getting better there.
And IBM, your old nemesis, I'm your current nemesis, IBM, your old nemesis, actually was trading up. Now, I think that's pre-conference call, so who knows? But you know what's interesting stock? Taiwan Semi. Taiwan came out, stock I've never seen as fast a rise and as fast a decline. It traded up to close to 160 and it's back down to 120. They reported stellar quarter, phenomenal guidance. They started the decline, or I wouldn't say started, but exacerbated the decline in semis when they said that the Chinese cell phone market is punk, that demand's not there, and cyclically it's supposed to be. So it'll be interesting to see. I almost bought that today. I did not. I added a little to Teradyne instead. They're not the same company. One's a testing company, but Teradyne came down quite a bit and I shaved the position. So I added a little bit to it.
There's a lot of places in semis for which you can choose your poison. I mean, you can be in a deep value like an Intel. You can be at a growth and reasonable price like Qualcomm, or you can go for the hyper growth like an AMD or NVIDIA. There's just so much to choose from. But you said something right now. And you know what my eye is not on that maybe it should be on is China. Zero COVID policy, which is the stated policy of China, has already been shown to affect the global economy, like when they shut down ports. And they're still going hell-bent for leather on having zero COVID policy, which means they're shutting down cities, they're shutting down ports, they're shutting down factories. Oh, by the way, next month is the Winter Olympics in Beijing, and they're going to shut down factories in order to clear the skies. It's kind of hilarious and tragic at the same time. But I'm glad you mentioned that because it is one of those things that's now flying under the radar screen that we all need to pay attention to. What exactly is going on with China? I mean, let's face it, they've been cutting their short-term interest rates. So they're not doing so well. And I don't think we're paying enough attention to it. What do you think?
My biggest concern is that after the Olympics are done, so go out a month or so, that they really start rattling the saber.
On Taiwan?
On Taiwan. And I think that's a big risk to the market. When you consider how much technology is in Taiwan and how they're interlinked, Taiwan has plants in China. It's the weirdest thing. They hate one another, but they do business with one another. So that's my concern with China. China has slowed down. I'd love to be president for life, but nobody's electing me. So I think that's going to continue to be an issue, what China does. The debt runoff there, but that I mean Evergrande and some others that are close to collapse, that's an issue. That's hitting the economy. It's hitting their investors. And there's no mercy there. There's nobody coming there to bail out the investors like there are here. And those stocks, I still would be a seller of Chinese equities.
So first off, I'll take you to Burger King. We can get you a crown and you can be king for life.
Thank you. But don't eat meat. So that's a tough one.
Now on a serious note, sometimes you and I, we have to go a little off topic from the markets per se. And we have to now when we're talking about China versus Taiwan, because I will tell you, if you're President Xi or his underpower structure in Beijing, you are keenly watching the American response to what's going on in Ukraine. And what's going on in Ukraine is a direct reflection of what happened in Afghanistan last year. Right now, the world is testing whether America has the resolve to defend democracy globally. And I'll tell you, it's an open question. So you see how this Russia-Ukraine thing goes, and that will determine a lot, in my opinion, about what happens versus China versus Taiwan. And let's be clear, you do not, as an investor, want China invading Taiwan. That will be an exogenous event. That will be a black swan that will make the market swoon. One thing with Ukraine, it's another thing with Taiwan, which produces, I actually forget, but a large percentage of the world's semiconductors.
And they're different. When you take a look at Ukraine, why we're there, it's to support our NATO allies and to keep Russia at a distance. when you talk about Taiwan, it's strategic and strategic to us and the rest of the world. And I believe that we'll take a firmer stance there. I don't think China's going to go after Taiwan in terms of declaring war. They could. And particularly if we are more involved with troops in the Ukraine, are we going to fight wars on a couple of fronts like World War II? Don't think so. So it's a question where we're going.
Let me jump in for a second. I'm not sure if this is what you're saying, but it doesn't matter whether you're saying it or not. I think one of the reasons for today's sell-off was a headline that kind of went around the news media yesterday that read something like this: President Biden is mulling sending troops to Ukraine. That was the headline. And that's exactly, if you clicked on the headline, what the article said. He's mulling the option. Like, he's mulling all options, like any good leader and any good military would advise a good leader to do, is here are your options. The fact that he and the military leadership are mulling that option does not mean that we're sending American troops to Ukraine. If we do, that is honestly frightening. That is Russian troops and U.S. troops with guns and tanks and bullets and shells facing off in a way that we frankly didn't see during the real Cold War. During the real Cold War, you saw proxy wars, things like Vietnam. You did not see Russian soldiers pointing guns at American soldiers who are pointing back. I don't think that's going to happen. What I do think is going to happen, by the way, and is happening, is we are sending just boatloads and truckloads and airloads of weapons to Ukraine. We are, the United Kingdom is, the rest of the NATO allies are, we are buttressing Ukraine.
I think we will send some troops there. I think it won't be a fighting force. It'll be an advisory force and just a show of our will to support NATO. In terms of China, we have been increasing our presence in North China Sea, which we should.
South China Sea, but I know what you meant.
Yeah, whatever it is. My geography is not great there. I've been to Hong Kong a few times, but didn't map out Taiwan in that trip. But we should get in front of it, because it's different when you send ships and troops there after China's already taken a foothold, like Russia and Ukraine. If we'd put our troops there, it would have been a different story.
We are, by the way. I mean, obviously, I'm an ex-Navy guy, but I do
know. No, I know we are. Sending, it's been reported.
Yeah, surface ships. And you don't talk about the submarines, because you're not supposed to talk about the submarines. I promise you, our attack submarines are over there sniffing out everything their Navy's doing.
And they know it. And China knows it.
Well, conceptually, they know it. They don't know where our submarines are. I promise you that.
But those would be the nuclear events for the market, not necessarily nuclear war. So you're going to want to watch out. And in terms of energy, well, let's not forget natural gas reserves and that the Russians support with natural gas most of Europe. It's interesting how all these things play out. And we could think about them all day long, talk about them all day long, but it's not going to mean anything to us or anybody because we don't have those predictive powers. So let's get back to the stock market.
Let's do it. I'm sorry, I'm jumping on you, baby.
Go ahead, jump in. Go
talk about natural gas, because here's what's going on. You're seeing natural gas prices go up on the fear of war in Ukraine. And what does that mean? That means that our exports from Chenier Pass and various other locations along the Gulf Coast are getting more and more pricey. That's good for America. It's also good for a pipeline company that I like a lot, Kinder Morgan. I forget if you and I have ever talked about this, but let me just give you the pitch on it really quickly. Kinder Morgan Pipeline Company. You know Rich Kinder, legendary leader. You know, the stock is still down 5% from pre-pandemic. Still down 5%, hasn't recovered, even though last year was a record year for EBITDA, and this year is going to grow even more. And as I just said, fundamentally, you just see natural gas flowing through their pipelines, which is the bulk of what they transport. That's one that I've been adding to over the past few weeks, and I think everybody should. I like that company a lot.
That's one I know well. I remember when they went from big dividend payer to, hey, we can't afford to do that anymore, in 15, I believe it was. And then I said,
you know,
there's value here.
It's now 6.2%, not taking away from what you're saying. You're absolutely right. That's why the stock is 17 and not 80, which is what it was 10 years ago.
Energy to me is a trade. It can be a year trade. It can be a two-year trade. Right now it's being a two-year trade. I want to talk about the autos for a second. So GM has gotten hit quite a bit. Volkswagen's gotten hit. Ford's gotten hit. And Ford, to me, that was the most obvious in terms of getting hit, because there's so much fluff in there, so much promotion. But I'll tell you what, they're sold out in their cheap pickup. They announced today, no more orders. Look at a Bronco. I saw a Bronco advertised online, used 1,000 miles, for $90,000. A Bronco. That's twice what it costs retail. And in fact, all the dealers are charging $10,000, $15,000 over and above it. So the car market's still a very hot market, as we heard from our guest last week, Jay Feldman, who knows the business as well as anybody. I'm looking at GM here. It's had such a big correction. However, I still think there's some fluff in it. And the EV cycle, I think, is going to be very disappointing for a lot. Very disappointing. There's just not going to be that uptake.
Let me just make this simple as far as what to look for in GM in the near term. Two things. They got to reinstate the dividend, and they've got to do some share buybacks. I mean, if they're killing it the way they seem to be killing it, then enough with balance sheet repair, enough with protection against the downturn, it's time to return capital to shareholders. Frankly, they should be doing that at the next quarterly report, which I think is next week. I'm not 100% sure. That's what you're looking for now. We know about pent-up demand, electric vehicles, the Lyriq, I'm on the list for it. We'll see when I get it. It's supposed to be this spring. We'll see how that car drives. I'll be giving you a firsthand report. But the legacy business of producing Equinoxes and Tahoes and Suburbans and Silverados, or in Ford's case, F-150s, that's where the money is. You know it. And they can sell them as fast as they can produce them.
They can. EVs are kind of troubled, just to go through that. And I think it's difficult to get too far over your skis and loving these, whether it's Rivians or what have you, because the charging networks aren't there. The range isn't there. If you want to buy a quick charger, it's still going to be 30, 40 minutes to get yourselves back up to 80%. And that's not counting if you run down to zero. If you're not using a quick charger, it's 2.5 hours to get a full charge. I mean, it's crazy. So you need to see more advances before I think you see broad adoption across the country. I mean, not every place has the density that LA or New York or Boston has.
Look, in theory, the infrastructure spending that's already been approved is supposed to be building out charging stations. And I read last week the DOE, Department of Energy, and another, I forget which one, another agency are already teaming up and figuring out how to get these spread out. Of course, what are they going to do? They're first going to put them on the rest stops for interstate highways. That's what makes sense. Build them out on the corridors and then eventually move them into more rural areas. But that should be coming. That should be coming. And I don't have any reason to needlessly flog EV. I just think that that's where we're going. And now we've got the approval to spend on these charging stations. So let's go do it.
Yeah, I think the private network will be building most of them going forward more efficiently and putting more out. But if you own an EV and you live in an apartment building, you've been charging your car for free. As you get more EVs.
It's unbelievable.
That's not going to be happening anymore. So it changes the financial picture of it for an owner. But that remains to be seen. Right now, of course, there's so much going on there because it's such a small segment of the market. So I'd expect to see continued momentum on those. You know the other area I want to talk about, Jim? Financials.
Okay, let's do it.
We've had the 10-year reverse. I'm going to talk about it in two respects. There's a lot of expectation going into the quarter. And then you have Goldman trade down 10% on the number, which was not a bad number. What happened with these companies in terms of missing the bottom line and making the top line is that they had to pay their employees more. So it went up in comp. And they had to pay them to keep them. They had to pay them to keep them motivated. They had to pay them because they couldn't find others out there to replace them. So you couldn't lose what you had. I still think the yield curve is going to steepen. I still believe these are great buys, particularly Goldman, which I added to last week on the second day of its decline. Now, my question to you is, and you could talk about anything you want, are we going to experience the same result when the energy companies report? So much expectation there because oil prices are so high, and you know as well as I do, they don't have 100% leverage to energy pricing. So is it going to be the type of thing where maybe they miss a little bit in the bottom line or they don't make whisper numbers, if whisper numbers still exist despite the market's decline, and we see a sell-off in those stocks?
Yeah, Steve, this is a good question. I don't think I like the comparison to financials simply because we know what happened with expenses at Goldman Sachs. They came out ahead of time and said, listen, guys, we're going to pay our people a lot. We'll mollify you, the investor, by saying that we've told our people, don't expect this as a new base salary. This is a one-time. We got to keep you here. And look, I've worked at Goldman Sachs and you've worked on the street. You know that sharp edges will take hold and make sure that expenses are adhered to going forward. But I don't see that type of expense creep in the energy sector. What I worry about more with the energy sector is—
In financials also, it was the trading volumes. Well, people expect them to be down. I think they were down a little more than some expected.
Actually, that's true too. I'm focused sort of on what I saw or maybe what I wanted to focus on. But let me go back to energy here. What would worry me and everybody is if these guys just started spending like drunken sailors on CapEx, if they started drilling like crazy, announcing all these projects. Now, that's what we should keep an eye on. We've got Chevron coming up, Exxon Mobil. That's what we should keep an eye on. I don't think they are going to in the near term, but, and this is an important but, when you look at the shale producing areas, there's a phenomenon that's been going on where what these exploration and production companies have been doing is completing previously drilled but uncompleted wells. So during the pandemic, and actually, frankly, going all the way back to 2014, there were a ton of wells that were drilled but left uncompleted for economical reasons. Those are the ones that over the last year, year and a half, have been being completed quickly and easily and bringing oil out of the ground. That inventory of drilled but uncompleted wells is rapidly depleting. And that means eventually they're going to have to start drilling again. I don't think that's this quarter or even next quarter, but you got to keep an eye on when those drilled but uncompleted inventories deplete and the exploration and production companies start drilling for real.
Let's turn back to near term in the market. What's your best guess? Your best guess that the bottom's in? And that gives you a lot of room. We were down 1,000 points on the Dow. We were down 120 points on the S&P. NASDAQ, we were down more than 4%. Has the bottom been put in? Now, what I'm asking is, will we revisit those levels but go no further? And is it all dependent on Powell?
I think the bottom's in, Steve. You're asking me for a question, for a direct answer, I give it to you. I don't think you drop another 4% on the S&P 500. At the peak, we were down, whatever, 12, 13% from the high, a good old-fashioned correction. For things to get worse than that, you have to have real economic troubles. You have to have people losing their jobs. That's the opposite of what's going on right now. Jobs are plentiful. You need to have the government not spending. You need to have companies not spending. I mean, the amount of CapEx that's going on, notwithstanding what I just said about energy, but these semiconductor and EV and battery companies are spending like crazy. And that's got a huge multiplier effect throughout the economy. So I don't see the economic malaise that would lead to something worse than what we've already had. Now, was today's bottom the bottom? I think it probably was, because honestly, that was one hell of a sharp reversal. I mean, that stunned me. Obviously, I made the call I made, but I didn't think we were going to end green today. I thought we'd ravel around the bottom and maybe form a bottom over the next couple of days, but that was pretty sharp. And if you get the follow through tomorrow in terms of green on the screen, people are going to pile in. Does it depend on Powell? Wait, let me address
that. Good.
Because this is important, okay? Steve and I both know this, and we've discussed this, folks. What Wall Street likes to do is it likes to one-up each other. If somebody says we're going to have 3 rate hikes, the next guy says 4 rate hikes. And after that, the next guy says not only 5 rate hikes, but the first one's going to be 50 basis points. And after a while, it's like that scene from the movie Something About Mary, where the guy goes, I've got a great business model. You've heard of 10-minute abs? My business plan is 9-minute abs. It's hilarious. And you've got to recognize the street for what it is. These guys want to make headlines, but it isn't reality. And if you're Jay Powell, sure, maybe you're fixated, maybe, on 3 rate hikes this year. That doesn't mean that because Goldman says 4 rate hikes 2 weeks ago and this week says 5 rate hikes, that you're going to kowtow to what Goldman says. Jay Powell and the Fed are likely to raise rates in March and then see what happens. Be data dependent.
Just to your point about analysts one-upping, having run a global research department, we know why they did that. Because II, the Institutional American Poll, that issuers, that corporations take a look at and say, who's the analyst that has the biggest reach? And who's the investment bank? When they match up, and they often do, because the big bankers can afford to pay the analysts as much as they want. And while Elliot Spitzer, way back, put this wall up between research and banking, and you can't tie analyst compensation to banking revenues, they all do it. If an analyst is at a firm and there's no banking in his sector or her sector, guarantee you, they're the lowest paid analyst. So that's just the reality. So when you go out and you put a call out there with the highest number or the lowest number from the investors, the institutional investors, you're going to get the call because they want to know why you stand so far away from the consensus. So that's why they do it. They may not believe it, but it's purely a marketing game. But let me give you some numbers here. So you talked about going into today, the S&P was down 7%. The average stock was down 15%. NASDAQ down 11%. Average stock down 22%. The NASDAQ composite, okay, bigger, down 43% versus the index being down 12%. And the Russell, well, that's been the worst, down 18%, the indices, the index, and the average stock down 38%. Now, a lot of those should be down quite a bit. So there's been a lot of carnage. We've actually been in a bear market, which is down 20% everywhere but the S&P. So the question is that low enough? We're so accustomed to these V-shaped recoveries over the last decade with an easy Fed. My issue continues to be that some people, and it was said in the show today, well, the Fed's going to be there. Essentially, that's what was said, that there's always a Fed put. And that Fed put just does not exist anymore because, let me just finish this one point, Jim, because you've got 70% of the U.S. public that's out there saying, we cannot afford to eat. We cannot afford our rent. We can't afford gas. So while there tends to be from the perch of CNBC, of everybody talking there, said, yeah, travel's going to open. People want to travel. People want to go visit places. They want to fly. Yeah, but that's the minority. That's not for the Fed to protect anymore. It's for the 70% that can't afford their monthly bills because prices have moved so high. That's my concern.
So I'm going to make one comment to that. And then why don't we wrap it up for today? Because I think we wanted to keep it tight, give the people what they need to know. On the show today, Jimmy Chanos was on, and I thought he did a very good job of saying, listen, the Fed's job is not to bail investors out of their stupid purchases. He's absolutely right. But what we have to do is define stupid purchases, and I will. Stupid purchases are buying GameStop and AMC and non-fungible tokens of a Bored Ape. Those are stupid purchases. Steve, you and I have spoken about this on many shows, and we're just going to stay consistent with that. But that's different from how the market for Apple shares will respond, okay? Beginning of the year, Apple at 31 times forward earnings, probably needed to come down. Now at 26 times earnings, it's probably just fine. And it will respond to what the Fed does, positive or negative in terms of interest rates. But that's not a stupid investment. If you bought it at 31 times forward earnings at the beginning of this year and now you're down, don't worry. Apple will be fine. Jimmy Chanos is right. The Fed doesn't care about the purchase of Apple earlier this year. It does care about the stupidity of buying bankrupt brick and mortar retailers or bankrupt movie chains or absolutely worthless collections of ones and zeros that take the form of a pixelated cartoon character. With that, Steve, I'm going to turn it back to you for the final word. I think we've given the people what they need and what they want today.
Summing it up, Jimmy thinks the bottom has been set. I think we can possibly revisit the bottom. We did not talk about one thing, and that's the earnings season that we're in front of right now. The heart of it kicks off this week, and I think that'll be a nice tell in the market. If the guidance is good, and we've seen some PMI numbers that have been a little weaker, not just in the U.S., close to, by the way, contraction territory, just over 50 at 51, that's going to be the story. After Powell's long gone from his press conference Wednesday, we're going to have the earnings. And if you see earnings growth above what's expected, you could very well see the market say, you know what, I just don't care. Guarantee that CEOs are going to be asked the question, what do you think if Fed goes twice, if they go 1% this year? And these CEOs are going to say, doesn't matter because
exactly.
Rates are so low. So if you get that guidance, if you get the reports in line to slightly better, I do think that the bottom's in and it's back up from here, but not everywhere. The market's not going back, in my view, to these companies that have where the emperor has no clothes. So
agreed.
If you have a final comment, Jim, bring it on, or we can just...
Listen, brother, I think you've set us up for next week. We'll be downstream of Apple earnings. We'll be downstream of Microsoft earnings, Intel, Boeing. Oh, I'm sure you're going to give me a hard time on that.
I will. I'm hoping to be able to, actually. But in full disclosure, I did buy puts on both Apple and Microsoft last week. I'm still making some money on them. I use it as protection. They expire on Friday. So I bought the weeklies, actually went out about 2 weeks when I bought them, just in case they miss. That Netflix print was kind of scary. I don't think that either one's going down 25%, but they were cheap at the time. So
We'll pick it up next week, right there.
All right, Jimmy, as usual, thank you. It's been a pleasure being on with you again, my partner, my frenemy, and until next week. And don't forget, if you like this, leave a good review. The new name of the show is The Odd Couple of Investing. Thanks very much for listening this week.
Jim Labenthal is an investment advisor representative of Cerity Partners and holds the Chartered Financial Analyst designation. Jim Labenthal and Cerity Partners are unaffiliated with Stephen Weiss. The securities discussed in this podcast by Jim, unless otherwise stated to the contrary, are securities that Jim either manages within the current client portfolios or owned by Jim personally. You should not consider the information discussed as personalized investment, tax, or legal advice, or solicitation to buy or sell any specific security. There's no guarantee that views and opinions expressed in this podcast will come to pass or a guarantee of future performance. Investing involves risk, and before investing, you should consult a qualified professional advisor. Stephen Weiss is not a registered investment advisor and is not affiliated with any regulated entity. The views and opinions he expresses are his own and are not intended to be advice or recommendations. Stephen does not guarantee the accuracy of his statements or views. Investors should perform their own due diligence and not rely upon the information contained in this podcast as the sole basis for their investments.